Och tomstamon closed till 5.
Now when I say I didn't know the name, but probably because all the important details were passed on, and I do know that they came to this country. Well, probably if they knew, because they probably could find out somewhere else. I don't know. But that was something that's better not inquired about, really, who this lad was. But they do know, they did know about it, because it was all passed on. You see, we could usually find out, this is how we used to keep our ears and eyes open, everybody that was in the resistance or was helpful, especially the farmers. Now, if they were shot down, north of Belgium was one of those runways when they used to go to Germany. Well, in 43, they seemed to be shooting them down over there like flies. And it seems to be it was all the Canadian crew that was coming down. They were coming down, oh, honestly. So that must have been a very heavy. But you could see it sometimes from the vein. You could see the fight in the air with the searchlights and how you felt. Oh, it was terrific, because you couldn't do anything. You see, and I used to feel so sorry for them. I used to say, oh, and they're in that encaged thing. And they must be able to see them. It must be absolutely. That's why I've got such a big respect for them. You know, fighting on the ground, I'm a soldier. Fighting on the ground, I've bad enough. But on the sea, it's the same, because I'm terrified of the sea. I'm terrified of drowning. But a little pip in the sky, and he's shooting at you, you know. It's a bit beyond your imagination. It must be horrible. We would more or less get to know through some communications, sometimes by foot or by bicycle. There was a plane shot down. The Germans were there. They took so many with them, so many dead. One or two missing. And we knew when they were missing, they were somewhere, you see. So everybody always used to keep an outlook. Because they used to hide from us the same way as we used to look for them. And of course, there's a lot in the Ulvane, some very big woods that start and run straight into the Ardennes. Actually, you could move in the woods and go right to Germany in the woods if you go through the Ardennes and all that. So you had to know your woods, and you had to know. Whenever we were out, even after curfew, you were on the lookout. On more occasions than none, it was through farmers that would either find them or the boys would go and knock on the door, taking a risk. Because you never knew who you knocked on the door and knocked on. And of course, some in the beginning, because we've had some horrific stories, you know. Some really that could film could be made of. And afterwards, when I talked to them now, and I said, "You remember when you did that?" And they said, "Oh, don't tell anybody."
How about your own risks? You know, the risks you were running. What did you go on to do with the partisans?
Well, I became the head courier. between the core and headquarters in Brussels. This is very difficult to explain. I did know the risk. I had seen what could happen. I had lost by then an awful lot of very good, brave men, young men, and very gallant older men. Who I respected very much. I also knew how it was. At one time I didn't regard it was quite such a. What shall I say? If anybody was caught and they talked. To block down. At one time I had very strong views on that. And I used to think, yeah, cults. Well, since I went through torture myself, there are people that talked, a lot of people talked. And I leave it up to them to live with that for the rest of their lives. But I also understand that there are moments when it's probably nobody's fault. I had found out. It's very difficult for me to put that actually because it sort of puts you on the foreground. I feel if I put myself on the foreground, I think I must have had a very, very good guardian angel that I've got away with it. So that's why it's so difficult for me to try and explain. Torture is terrible. But then, we always gave, when a new member, he was put on trial, right? And they didn't press him. They asked him to do certain things. To know a little bit, they had already found out, do you know, yeah, found out what kind of a man and that kind of character and so forth. But they were always given the choice. Even when they did their first bit, shall I say. And I have known people that have taken part on their first official action and that have come back, I've been there, I've been in the room, out of view, but I've listened. And they have declared, I can't do it. And that's acceptable. And we did accept that. They had to be strong enough and say, no, I can't do it. But some of those men, because they were still men, although they said they couldn't do that, helped us all through the war. Also, if he would have been caught with whatever he was doing, bringing information, he would have also been sentenced to death and probably suffered interrogation most probably. They were to know that. A lot of, after the war, when some of those Belgian traitors were caught, and we had one who was a military, I don't know, he was a baby, not a brigadier here, because it's grade school different. just above a soldier in Belgium. In the Belgian army. And he was all right, but he was caught and he betrayed. Now, the point there, you see, to me, that I wouldn't have anything to do with if he was still alive. They killed him. The prisoners killed him when he was loosed in Louvain. The prisoners from Louvain in Buchenwald. They bounced him up and down till there was nothing left of him. He denounced and denounced and denounced family after family when he was caught. And then after the war they discovered, which I got in my possession as well, some papers that were left behind by the Germans. And there is some statements of him. Good, by then he was long dead. And he's so stupid. He repeats himself. And it's, he writes, this is from his prison cell. Unbelievable. He writes in there to Hitler, Herr Führer, begs on his knees to work for him. And he's denouncing his friends he worked with. At least, roughly, I can say, there's about 50 families, whole families that were sent to the concentration camp. Probably 5 came back. Old truths, green, because I was brought in his cell. And I had met him once. And he was like a pig. That. And he was sitting in the corner of the cell, and Führer was sitting in another behind the desk. And he brought me in the man's prison. And they started talking, of course he was talking in German, and I could speak German pretty fluently. And I came in and he said, hello, he said, because I know that, you see, very thick skin. And I looked at him, and of course I looked back too. And I must say, it was an effort sometimes, but I found that I got away with a lot of things if I was very polite.
Yes, I want to ask you a lot more about that later, but what was this man's name?
Flöger. And he said, do you remember me? And I said, I knew he was about me. I said, who is this? To the German. I said, Oberführer. I said, who is this? He says, he knows you. I said, yeah, I don't know him. I said, who are you? Oh, well, you worked with me there. I said, my name isn't Precept. He said, that was my... I knew it who he was. But I'd only seen him once. And that was an unfortunate mistake when with two other men we were bringing 4 Russians that had escaped from Salt Mines. And we went to fetch those 4 Russians from this farm, went through all the fields. We had to take it in relay, go so many yards, because he couldn't ride a bicycle. And we had only 3 bicycles, and there were 4 Russians, so we had to take it in turn, and they were filthy dirty and they stunk to air. So it wasn't a very pleasant journey. And who would pass us in the middle of nowhere was him with two other lads, and one of them, because I told him at the time, I told him off at the time, he said, "That's Lisette." And that was in a passing by. There I was afterwards. That's how easy it was, you see. And he says, and your brother, because he wanted to know. He was in the army, you see. He was a lot older than my brother as well. And, I said, "I don't know." I said, "I don't know who this man is." I said, "You're wasting your time." I said, "And if he's a Belgian," I said, "why doesn't he speak French?" He kept writing down. I don't know what he was writing down because I never saw. It was all in Germany. I said, "I don't know him. I don't know him at all." "I've been to your house," he said. "Oh, so many people come to the house. It's a shop." I said, "Well, I don't know you."
Would this have been the occasion of your first arrest?
No, this was when I was in prison. And my first arrest, I was interviewed in an unusual place.
Could you tell me why you were arrested, you know, right from the beginning of the incident? What were you doing in order to have been arrested?
We worked day and night. There was always something going on. Some of those boys were absolutely exhausted. By then, of course, there were so many. We had so many pilots sitting here, there and everywhere. And I'm very proud to say, every pilot that came in our house, now I mean were in our safe houses, the majority of the safe houses were given by my parents because they were friends of the family for many years. I don't mean now that you can trust, because you don't know, in a war you don't know who eventually you got to trust. But we were lucky. None of those that gave shelter to the Allies for months and years were ever arrested. So that's something to be proud of. I do know that some of the this particular instance, for instance, was an English boy who only spent one night by these people. But he was in the resistance, in the secret army. And his wife is mine. And they'd given shelter quite a long time. But this particular boy, because she survived, and she told us what happened at the interview, her husband was hung, his head was not hung, chopped up. Oh, it's accident. All because that boy said he only slept there one night. It's possible, like I say, he's been beaten. Nobody can say, "I never talked. I never trusted anybody that said, I won't talk. I could stand that, and I can do that." I used to think they're usually the first ones to break down. The bravados. Those that were very quiet were usually the strongest ones. And you see, it did happen.
And your own arrest, you know, your first arrest, what led to that? What were you doing?
Well, apparently, you see, in those papers that I said were discovered after the war, our family's name mentioned over and over again about my brother, on every page. If you can get hold of François Damon, number so-and-so in the army, his number in the army, he's got connection in Brussels and he knows so and so, and he's a very good friend of Count so and so, and you know, amazingly how things go around. And then my name is mentioned, not knowing much about me.
Was he your proper name, or was it Lisette? You know, your
yeah, but my proper name is mentioned. Hortense Damar, the sister of François Damar, mentioned on occasion, tried to interview her, tried to, you know. So we knew that we were in danger every day. You had to just hope and keep your fingers crossed and do your best and try and be as careful as anything. But this particular day, it did come unexpected. And we were very careful. But we mustn't have been careful enough. But then again, you see, it was with him talking so much, and with being a key, so that meant he got 8 men under him. I mean, there wasn't all that much, but a key commandant had. In the beginning, they only had 5. So that was his key. And with him being a key, he would know a bit more than the other. And of course, he had his suspicion, I suppose. And he, of course, knew about the house, although he was never allowed in the house. Because the commandant was taking it home as well. And this particular day, I mean, the heads used to come in and out and fetch her. There was always signs. My mother used to, if there was a danger, my mother used to have arranged, which is something I didn't know till after the war. Arrange something with the display in the window of the shop. If a certain box was in the wrong way around, it was something to do with some personal figure, this was, and sold a margarine. And it did help, it did save. When they were at home, my mother had the sense to turn it around, and they went past and survived. And that lad is still alive now, and he's still grateful. I asked him to do something not long ago, and he said, "I will do it for you, you know why." And then I have to hear the whole story again.
The story of your first arrest, aren't you, Hortense?
Now that was in 43. I think about November. I can't just remember. No, it must have been.
Doesn't matter December. About the date, yeah.
I know it was very cold, but let me think back now. Before November. And it was rather a nice day. It was about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and I was forever doing something. I don't particularly know where I was going or what. In any case, I had nothing on me. And I went on a bicycle, went on the boulevard, and all of a sudden I could hear voices on the back of me, and I looked around, and it was 2 of our members. One was my cousin, Pierre von Bissonnette, who was still not gone on the ground. He was living away from home because he was not married at the time, in another town of Tina, which was about 20 kilometres from Louvain. But he lived in Louvain, and he was very much involved with the partisan army, but he still had his official passport, identity card. He still lived officially at his mother's, who lived. His father was a concierge at the bank. So that was still on his identity card. And just joking, and with him happened to be another member of a man who was a baker by profession, who had a big bakery, and in the past who had given shelter to many Allied soldiers behind his main ovens, quite honestly, and some of them that are still alive will remark about that, how warm it was in the winter. I don't know what it was like in the summer. And it was like a bolt out of this, out in the blue. There we sort of ride together at one moment, which was unintentionally, you know, they were just passing. And the next minute, we were all knocked off our bicycles. My bicycle went somewhere, and I was very concerned about it. Pulled me by my hair, and very long, blonde hair. And there was where that had come from, I don't know, a big sort of lorry, a van affair, but a big one. I was thrown in there. Pierre Van Woodsnow was thrown, my cousin was thrown in there. But their face, they already had the bleeding out of their nose and out of their mouth. The beating they had had, they'd beaten their heads against the trees. They were thrown in this into this one, quite honestly. Before we realised what had happened, we were all separated and we landed in a house which I didn't know was anything to do with the Germans. In the main street in Louvain, in the station street, a private, what they used to call gentleman's house, which was overtaken by the very elite German secret police and the very elite so-called traitors of the gendarmes, which was a great higher as the police force. And it wasn't being the old era, as they call gentlemen's restaurants. The entrance was like you would call as wide as a garage, and then the main stairs would lead off there, and then the rooms behind it. It was a big house, about four stories high. Downstairs, they were all built in the same sort of layout of the rooms. Where the stairs were, immediately on your right, you had not a very big room. And that was where the guard was. And it was an old, very old German SS guard. Ordered the soldiers with his SS, which is an old man. In other words, like a porter, identity card keeper, and all that sort of business. I was dragged upstairs. They all seemed to be very athletic, you know, everything was done on the run. And the men were all by that time, there was some more men coming in. Oh, it was utter chaos. And they seemed to be left behind. I was taken upstairs, taken in this big room. And there was the German interrogator and some Belgian Gestapo. and they started shouting, I left them in Italiana. Quite honestly, I was absolutely petrified. But I then showed, mind you, it did, I suppose it did show, because you can't help you face altering. And they know that as well. But something inside that taught me, you know, to keep telling you, control yourself, you know. I knew that I wanted to be on top of what was happening. But this was, you know, just, I thought, had it now, you see. And then the door, when I wasn't allowed to turn round, that was it. I did turn round once, automatically, you know, you look, and I had just fist in my face, so they didn't do it the second time. And as I turned round, they said, we got you.